So Tony Ferriello is a new friend of mine, everybody. Brand new. We met this year right before the pandemic. I hope our friendship didn't cause it because we met, the pandemic happened. Yeah. Do you think it had to do with that?
I don't know.
I'm not sure. But he is known as a compassionate and empowering life coach, a motivating and thought-provoking trainer. Tony has dedicated himself to both promoting competent and respectful healthcare for the transgender community by educating providers and advocating on behalf of patients, also training educators on providing safe and respectful places for transgender children in school environments. He encompasses a unique ability to make light of a sometimes challenging situation, and he puts his audience at ease to fully participate in his trainings. And we're so, so, so happy you're here.
Despite a
hurricane. So I'm going to stop talking, sharing, and then you can go ahead and share.
Okay.
And we'll get started.
Awesome. So here we go. Let me do, and okay. So I'm happy to be here. I'm sorry about the other day, but I lost power and I just moved down by the water, and I told all my friends prior to the summer that we will be hit by hurricanes now because I am by the water, and truth was told. So anyway, the genderbread person, I if you don't have it printed, this is the first thing I want to go over, and I'm hoping that you don't look like this once we're done. I'm going to try to make it as clear as possible, and I love starting my training's off with this because this is really a cool way of kind of teaching people who don't know the difference between all these different identities and things that make us up. The genderbread person, if you take anything away from this slide, I'm going to ask you to take away that every single thing I'm talking about is separate. And I will give you a few examples afterwards. So your gender identity, and it's being male, female, something else in between or neither. But today I like to treat it as like a trans non-binary 101. So we're going to keep it male, female, okay, or somewhere in between. But your gender identity, no matter who you are, lives in your brain. It's your deep sense of being male, female, or something else or in between. Your gender expression is different than your gender identity. So that's the way you express yourself to the world through mannerisms, haircuts, the way you dress. For a good example, you can have somebody who identifies as female, gender identifies as female, but expresses more masculine, wearing jeans, t-shirt, baseball hats all the time. Doesn't mean she's not a woman, it just means her gender expression is a little bit more masculine. And honestly, gender expressions are all within, you know, gender norms that people have created years ago. I won't even get into that. I will not stand on my soapbox. Anatomical sex, that's hormones, chromosomes, genitalia, but it also is brain sex. And brain sex is the most important because you can't change the brain. Now, you're going to be hearing genitalia a lot today, probably, especially through this slide, because there's no magic string that attaches your genitalia to your gender identity. All right, and we're going to talk about that. I'll give you a good example. So then there's sexual attraction and romantic attraction, two different things. We need to talk about this because if we only talk about sexual attraction, then we're leaving out the people who are asexual, who don't have sexual attractions to anyone, but can still have a romantic attraction to someone. For example, you can be sexually attracted to both male and female, but only see yourself in a romantic relationship with a female, all right? So that's the difference. So let me tell you a little bit about how things are not connected. If there was a non-trans person, now cisgender is somebody who's not trans. So if there was a cisgender man, and this guy unfortunately was either in a car accident or he had cancer and they had to remove his penis, would he no longer be a man? And you're all saying, well, of course he would be. Yeah, that's why you can't say to somebody like me who's transgender, you're not a guy because you don't have that between your legs, right? We can't say that. And this is a whole other workshop, but if you think you know what's in everybody's pants when you're walking down the street, you're totally mistaken. You do not know. And if you really care there's other people you can call and we'll help you through that. You know what I mean? So honestly, and then a lot of times people think like, you know, I identified as a lesbian prior to transitioning in 2005. And a lot of people think I'm gay now. So a lot of people think I'm attracted to guys because I was gay before. No, my gender identity didn't change my sexual romantic attraction. So now I'm a straight guy. I'm still attracted to women. And if you asked me years ago what I was going to be when I grew up, I never would have said a straight guy, but it is fact. So the gender red person, I definitely gave the PDF for a few reasons. One, so you can look at this after the training and say, what the hell was that guy talking about? But I think the most important thing is to flip this over. On the other side, it's blank. And you can make a line through that arrow to where you sit on your womanness, manness, you know, your femininity, your masculinity. We're all, every single person that walks this earth is a combination of every one of these things on different levels. Everyone in this world has a gender identity, but it's only the trans and non-binary communities where people say to us, how can you know that? There's no way, right? I want you to think about that. So that's the genderbred person. So now I'd like to talk a little bit about the terminology and the misconceptions, and we're going to start with transgender. So a transgender person is someone who has different sex, gender identity, and gender expression than one assigned to them at birth, regardless of their sexual orientation. Some of the misconceptions: that transgender people struggle with mental illness. Now, gender identity and mental illness are two different things. And I was at a conference once and this speaker said it very, very cool. This trans woman, and she said, being trans doesn't mean you're crazy, but being trans can make you crazy. You know, a lot of the kids that I work with, they struggle with depression and anxiety, and it's always coming from external influences, not internal influences. You know, when people tell them that they're not who they know they are, when educators are not intervening when bullying is taking place, it could be a death sentence to them. You know, and we're going to go over suicide attempts and rates among the youth of my community. Another misconception is surgery is top priority for all trans people. Not true. Certain trans people need certain things for a healthy transition, a healthy life, and that's what they need and that's what they should have. You know, there's a lot of us that are working on changing transgender and gender dysphoria from a psych diagnosis to a medical code. If we change it to a medical code, then I can say to a health provider, I need chest surgery, I need a hysterectomy, and I need whatever, and they're going to say, okay, check, 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 and it's going to be covered. So there's people working with that, but not every single trans person needs surgery for a healthy transition. Every trans person needs hormone therapy. That's not true either. Transgender children are too young to know that they are transgender. Wrong. There's two questions I'm asked that you're probably not asked a lot. I'm asked about my genitalia more than you're probably asked, hey, how's your day going? Number one. And it's inappropriate to ask anybody about their genitalia. And number two, how can these kids know that they're trans? All right. They don't know that they're trans. They know that they're male or female or neither. Just like all non-trans people knew, like at a certain age, you start recognizing your gender. At four or five and six, it's not uncommon, okay? What we need to say to these children is, cool, what can I help you with? What do you need from me, right? As adults in their lives, educators, parents, our roles in their life should only be to help them down a loving, healthy, happy life journey and trying to stop those emotional roadblocks, the damaging emotional roadblocks that come from people saying, no, you're not who you know you are. You know, and I always tell the kids, listen, be who you know you are, not who everybody else is telling you you are. Fact. If I listened to the people who told me in my life that they knew me better than I knew myself, I'd be a married Italian woman cooking pasta for my three kids every Sunday. Honestly, right? That's who I would be. That is not me. And honestly, I always laugh when I say that because it's unimaginable to me. But the fact of the matter is I would have killed myself long before that. we all, every one of you on this call, your lives have touched people that you don't even know. We can't live in the truth. We can't live in happiness if we can't live with ourselves, right? So trans and non-binary children, students, need to be acknowledged for who they are, okay? And that's a big deal, man. We'll save them if you say, cool, you're a girl? All right, awesome. Go have a seat and we're gonna learn how to multiply or something. Non-binary. So non-binary gender is any gender that isn't exclusively male or female. Non-binary people may feel some mix of both male and female, somewhat in between, or something completely different. Let's talk about the misconceptions. Biggest one, they don't exist. People don't think non-binary people exist. How can that be? I'm trans, okay? And I don't know what it's like to be non-binary, but I still accept that non-binary people exist, and I still honor them. For all, I don't know how many people out in the audience today are cisgender or transgender, but if you're cisgender, stop trying to understand what it must feel like to be transgender or non-binary, because you're setting yourself up for failure. You'll never know. Like, I will never know what it's like not to be trans, but this is what happens in some cases. If we block ourselves from the fact that you're trying to understand, if you stop trying to understand and just accept what is, this world will be a much better place. And your brain won't be like, oh my God, this can't be. Accept it. There's non-binary and trans people in this world, and we honor you, so honor us. How's that? Non-binary people are just confused. Wrong. Non-binary people do not medically transition. Yes, they do. If they need that for a healthy life, and they're medically necessary procedures. This is not a cosmetic, hey, I just want a nose job. It's nothing like that. I can tell you that my chest surgery saved my life. They're life-saving procedures. All non-binary people go by they, them pronouns. Wrong, not true. But they, them, and we're gonna talk about the power of the pause after, at the end of this training, but yeah, you need to honor people's pronouns. As you can see, Julie and I and Christy, we all have our pronouns at the end of our names because we want people to know two things. One, this is the pronoun I use. And two, we're cool, right? Because that's what it's telling people who are in the trans and non-binary communities, that we get you just by putting your pronouns there. So transgender individuals have two types of transition. So it's a social transition. A social transition is the outward change in appearance and or presentation that a transgender and non-binary person may undergo in order to express their gender identity. You'll see this a lot with the young ones, right? The younger grades, that the earlier grades where there's no surgery or even hormone blocking options at some point in their lives. So they're gonna come into your classroom and they're gonna say, hey, call me Tony. And you're gonna be like, what? Your name used to be Susie. And no, it's Tony. And I am a he. And you're gonna say, okay, cool, Tony. And go ahead and have a seat. And you're gonna remember that that child needs you to do that to help them. They will never be able to learn. A child can't give 100% of who they are if they can't be 100% of who they are. I say this all the time when I'm training educators. You are setting them up for failure. So social transition, this is my name, this is my pronoun. They might start wearing different clothes, growing their hair, cutting their hair. So that's what that is. And older trans people go through this too. Medical transition, undergoing medical intervention to alter physical and sexual characteristics of one's body to affirm their gender identity. Okay, the hormone blockers that they use for kids to interrupt or stop the puberty from happening saves them. When a transgender or non-binary kiddo is going through puberty, the rate of suicidal thoughts and attempts skyrocket. I'm a big advocate for that. And transition is not a one size fits all. You can have 15,000 trans people in a room. Wow, I wouldn't want to be in there. That'd be a lot. And every one of them will need something different, just like every non-trans person needs something different in their lives to, you know, to be happy and to feel good. You know, I can tell you firsthand what it feels like. And I get really emotional when I think back when I couldn't be Tony. When every day I got up and I was like, shit, here's another day. Am I going to live through this day, or am I going to end up killing myself before the day is over? And thank God I was strong enough not to kill myself, because it got really, really close a few times. But now to get up and just be me, there's no other feeling like it. You know, I even forget I'm trans sometimes, which is kind of cool. Bathrooms. Okay. So I want to talk about bathrooms, because this is a big deal. No matter where you live in the country, you know, some states have, like Connecticut has a law that says what bathrooms trans and non-binary kiddos use, some don't. So I like to talk about best practices. Okay. So best practices. So these are some signs that people I know are so familiar with, right? Everybody sees them, men, women, men, and family. All right. Things are changing. So students should have access. Let me just change where my little thing is. Students should have access to restrooms that matches their gender identity. Schools may maintain a separate restroom facility for male and female students, provided they allow students to access them based on their gender identity, not based exclusively based on the student's assigned birth sex. Okay? Students should be provided access to a reasonable alternative restroom, such as a single stall unisex gender neutral restroom or the health office restroom. So here's my opinion on the health office restroom. I don't like it. Why is Tony going to use the bath, going to the nurse's room every time he has to use a bathroom? The kid's a target, right? So, and let me just add this, a bathroom is a bathroom. It's not a social event. Maybe it is a little bit, but a lot of parents and educators quickly think that kids are going to make believe they're another gender so they can go into a bathroom and sexually abuse somebody. Stop. If you're thinking that, I'm going to ask you very kindly to stop. That is not the case. Okay. Under no circumstances should a student be required to use a restroom facility that does not match the student's gender identity. Under no circumstance. You are damaging them emotionally every time you ask them to do that. So let's look at these. So bathroom signs you might have seen, gender neutral, everybody, like I'm sure you're shaking your head, but I can't see you. But Julie, have you seen signs like this?
I have. I've seen probably all these signs.
Okay, awesome. And people are getting creative. Oh, hold on. Sorry. There you go. Now, so these are actual signs that I've seen. Now, here's a quick story, which is funny. When all this bathroom stuff started happening and people started taking it serious, I was very happy. I went to Brattleboro, Vermont to visit my brother, and we went into a restaurant, and I had to use the bathroom. So there was three bathrooms in the front of the restaurant, and they were all vacant. And there was this older woman standing there looking at all of them. I said, ma'am, and she was like, I don't know which one to go in. And every door said, human, human, and human. And she didn't know which one to go in because she's looking for women's or W or whatever, L, ladies, whatever. So it's a pretty quick, cool story. But bathrooms are important. Kids will not eat or drink anything all day to avoid it, or they'll hold in all day and they can get urinary tract infections. And I said this when Julie and Christy and I were talking a couple of weeks ago. The first thing a parent always says to me, and I can tell you this, I am not exaggerating on this, is what are we going to do about school, Tony? First thing they ask, is my kid going to be bullied? Is the administration going to understand? Are they going to, what bathroom are they going to use? What are they going to do for gym? And we're going to go over locker rooms in a second. All this stuff comes because kids need to go to school. They need to be educated, and it's something that the parents can't avoid. And every student needs to be, like, with other students. I mean, a lot of parents say, I'll just homeschool them. No, part of school is to be socialized, right? And who knows this better now? We're going through this pandemic thing, right? So locker rooms, best practice, okay? Students should have access to the locker room that matches their gender identity. Any transgender or non-binary student who is uncomfortable using a facility that is consistent with his or her or their gender identity should be provided a safe and private alternative. In other words, if they don't feel safe going into the girls' locker room and they're a trans girl, we need to offer them a safe and private place. And don't offer them the old janitor's closet down in the back of the hall, because I'm telling you, you're probably saying, is this guy kidding? I'm telling you, I'm not kidding. That's what some of these kids have to change into. It's horrendous. In no case should a transgender or non-binary student be forced to use a locker room corresponding to their gender assigned at birth. In locker rooms that involve undressing in front of others, a private option should be provided for any student, trans or not, that finds changing in a group or in front of others invasive and embarrassing. I'm telling you, every time I read that slide, I am triggered from when I was in middle school. Mm-hmm. That was the worst part. So it's not just for trans students, any student that really, with all the body shame that happens these days, I'm surprised any student wants to change in front of anyone. Okay, so this is a 2017 Gay, Lesbian, and Straight Education Network, GLSEN. I'm not sure if everybody's heard of that. So this is an average percentage of transgender and non-binary students that were prevented from. 24% was prevented from using a bathroom that aligns with their gender identity. Prevented, that means that they were outright denied. 25% were prevented from using their chosen name. In Connecticut, that's illegal. 26% were prevented from using the locker room that aligns with their gender identity. Let's continue. Percentage of trans and non-binary students hearing remarks regularly. 69% heard negative remarks about transgender people. 80% heard the negative remarks about gender identity. 87% heard gay used in a negative way. Now, there is an opportunity here, people, okay? I always ask educators, what do you say when you hear it? Well, I just tell them not to say it like that. No. You have an opportunity to coach and teach. If a child is using gay in a negative way, even if it's just in conversation or towards another student, first console the other student and say, that was uncalled for. But the kid that's saying it, I would have an open-ended question and ask them, why do you think gay is negative? Because here it means happy or love. So where is that coming from? You have an opportunity to maybe help this kiddo. You don't know what kind of family he's coming from or they're coming from. You don't know, you know, kids aren't born thinking that gay is a bad thing, right? So it's just, and set the tone for your classroom, for your school, for your district, that this is the way we treat LGBTQ people. All right, this is, gay is not used in a negative way here, and hold people accountable. You know, and I always say to educators, you can say in this school, in Tony Ferriolo Middle School, we honor and love all students. So that type of behavior is unacceptable.
I love, you're getting some comments in the chat that I just want to bring up, which is beautiful. So Bridget said, is it an opportunity or is it even a responsibility? Which is
It's a responsibility. Good for you.
Yeah, I love it, right?
Bridget, I am going to steal that.
Yeah, what a shift, right? It's an opportunity, yeah. Sure. Or it's your responsibility as a safe human being in a school system.
Yes, thank you.
So beautiful. And then the other thing that I wanted to say is, we've been talking a ton about what it means to be explicit. So silence around, let's say someone says, oh, that's so gay, right? Yeah. When we don't do anything, silence is an aggression, microaggression to that student. So it is exactly like you're complicit in the comment if you hear it and you're silent. So that's the only thing I wanted to add.
Yeah, we teach people how they can treat us too. So in 2000, this is... something I always want to talk about because I think it's really important. In 2018, the American Academy of Pediatrics revealed an alarming levels of attempted suicide among transgender and non-binary youth. Now let's talk about this. This is attempted. This is not suicidal thoughts. This is actual attempts. These percentages do not include the kids that have succeeded. And unfortunately, there has been quite a few. Okay. So the highest rates were among transgender boys and non-binary youth, by the way. More than half of transgender male teens who participated in this survey reported attempting suicide at least once in their lifetime. 29.9% of transgender female teens said that they have attempted suicide. Among non-binary youth, 41.8% of the respondents stated that they have attempted suicide at some point in their lives. But this is what we know, and this is so freaking important. Just one supportive adult, one, cuts the chance of an LGBTQ youth will attempt suicide by 40%. And sometimes it's not their parents. Sometimes it's an educator that just says, you know what? I'm sorry, I get really emotional. You're fine when you're here. We accept you and we love you. You're going to save that kid. I sit with kids up at psych wards a lot. And I haven't since the pandemic, which is killing me because I know they need me the most. And what do you say to a 13-year-old and they say they don't want to live anymore because nobody's like accepting them? I'm telling you, be that person, please be that person that saves them, because you will. That's 40% is a big percentage. So pronouns. Let's talk about pronouns. He, him, hers, they, them. There's much more, but that's the ones we're going to talk about. So school personnel should use the name and pronouns appropriate with the student's gender identity, regardless of the student's assigned birth sex. Students should not have to obtain a court-ordered name or gender change or to change their student records in order to be addressed by the name and pronoun that corresponds to their gender identity. In Connecticut, they don't even need their parents' permission. If a kid says, call me Tony and he, the school has to call them Tony and he. What a concept. The school will train all teachers and staff and school administrators to use the appropriate name and pronoun. In all cases where a student is using a chosen name, their birth name is considered private information and should not be disclosed. Don't out your students. Do not out your students, because some students will come in sometimes and really be stealth and not too many people know that they're trans, and maybe just the nurse and the principal and vice principal do because of medical reasons. But if that leaks out, it's over for them. It's over.
Tony, you told me something that I learned just specifically for the last time we were on Facebook Live together. Yeah. And you said you taught me what a dead name was, and you taught me that it's never okay to ask.
Yes.
And so can you say that? Because for me, this was learning, and I was like, of course, but it was still learning.
Yeah, so dead name is a term that came out like maybe 3 years ago. It's referring to their birth name. And just the term dead name, you can see how painful it is for somebody to be called their birth name. I'm asked a lot, you know, what my name was before I transitioned. I usually say Pat, ha, ha, ha. And the only reason why they're asking me is because they're looking at me and they're saying, there's no way that dude used to be a chick, right? I mean, it's for their comfort. I need to understand this. I need to wrap my head around it. Asking somebody what their name was prior to transition is inappropriate to ask. There's no reason for you to know. So I would hope that you'll be mindful moving forward. If you're asking trans people that question, you can stop. And if you're not, I love you. How's
that? That's perfect. Thank you.
Okay. So when families are struggling and not accepting, because you know you're going to start accepting all your students, and I'm sure you are already, but what happens if you have a trans or non-binary kiddo and their parents aren't accepting? So this is the best practice. Always honor your student's gender identity, pronoun, and name. However, never out your student to their families. Prior to parents meeting, where your student might be present, have a conversation with your student explaining how you honor their identity, but to keep them safe, you'll be using their name, you know, their birth name with their parents, that their parents call them. Listen, I'm not saying this is going to be easy, but it's necessary. Okay, that, you know, or you say they, them, or you use, you know, whatever, you know, maybe you avoid the name somehow, be creative, but a conversation with your student saying, I get you, but I'm going to keep you safe. Brownie points. And you're saving them, because some families are not only unaccepting, they can be physical about it. You know, we don't want the kids being kicked out of their homes. So 51% on an average students, transgender youth attempt suicide. That drops to 37%, which is still a high number, if parents are accepting. Even when parents are uncertain about their child's transition, it is still a safer emotional environment than when the child is outright rejected by their parents. You know, sometimes they're rejected because of religious reasons. I get a lot of that. So You know, I'm told I'm charming. I don't know. But I talk to parents all the time and from all over the country. And I usually get them at least to a place where they'll allow their kiddo to be who they are. And then I just coach the parents to be kind. Wow. So what I'd like to do is go through some of the drawings from these two books, Artistic Expressions. Volume one is The One with the Monster. Volume two is the beautiful drawing of a mom holding a baby that was done by Maeve, one of the trans girls that came through my program. So the reason why I asked them, what does body dysphoria feel like, is because I wanted you to know. When I decided to do these books, it was really, my target audience was educators, health providers, mental health providers, and parents. You don't know the struggle because you're not trans, and we don't expect you to, but this is going to give you a little taste of it, okay? So put your seatbelts on. So this is Edgar, age 14, and he wrote, "Body dysphoria to me feels like being locked in a cage, as cliche as that may sound. Sometimes I feel superior, but my human form is keeping me down. There are lots of things I'll never be able to experience because of my body, and even worse, many, many people think my human form has to define me. I drew weapons around my cage because I feel like I'm being tortured for having any confidence, and my body is my punishment." Whoa. If this is what Edgar's thinking about because he's not being accepted, this kid was not accepted anywhere, school, home, or at whatever, how is he going to learn history? How is he going to learn anything if he is feeling this way inside? Remember, struggle is invisible. You can have a student smiling from ear to ear, and inside they're thinking about going up to the roof to jump off the building. I always treat everybody like they're struggling. Be kind, be accepting, understanding. You know, Edgar is still alive. Honestly, it's been a couple of years since this drawing, and I'm shocked that he hasn't really killed himself, unfortunately. He's still struggling. So Aubrey, age 14, what gender dysphoria and body is the constant want to almost explode, to burst free from being locked in a cage and locked in a body and hurting. And to make it worse, media stereotypes of women. So I feel like I have to live up to those. In my case, I am a girl trapped in a male body. I am doing my best to change the language around I am trapped and I'm born wrong when it comes to these the trans community and non-binary community in a whole. I now say to them, no, with a smile. Remember, if you're smiling, you're not judging. And I'll just say, no, actually, you were born in your body. And if you need to change your body, we'll help you. What do you need? And it totally shifts them. Remember, if you feel trapped, it brings anxiety. If you feel you were born wrong, it brings depression. What do these kids struggle mostly with? Depression and anxiety. Done. Right? So we want to shift them from that. This is Parker, age 16. I feel as if I'm in a constant hell. I feel paranoid that each and every person views me as a female, and that causes constant anxiety. I live in fear that someone will call me a girl, and when someone does, I can't feel my body. Pronouns are important. Parker needs you to call him he. This is what he feels like. I want you to just take note of the knives, because there's a couple of things that I'm going to show you later on. And knives are a common, I think that's what they're really using to help people feel the pain, the deep pain that happens when we misgender. I have a tattoo of this on my leg. I would show you, but I'm wearing shorts. Honestly, I'm full disclosure. I'm in Zoom attire. Alexander, age 16. For me, dysphoria comes from words I hear from others and from my own mind. Sometimes it seems like the only way to get the huge monster off my back is self-harm. Cutting, big in this, big in this community. So what do you want to be when you grow up? I don't know, but I ask them anyway. I want them to feel like they have a future. That's why I asked the question. So Ross, 14, when I grow up, I want to be in a family. I want to be a husband and I want to be a father. Common theme. Look at this one. Maeve, the cover. I simply want to be a mother of a happy family. I won't be lonely. I will be needed, wanted, and loved. A lot of times people don't think that trans kids can have babies, and the only way they're going to have babies if we harvest their eggs and freeze their sperm. A lot of times they don't want that. Parents say you're too young to know that. They're not too young to know that. And in a Self-Made Man documentary, Kaylee's mom tells a story, and Kaylee, you know, didn't want to freeze her sperm. And Kaylee finally said to her mother, I don't want sperm to be a part of me. I'm not a guy. I don't want to be anybody's dad. Okay? So we have to listen to that. And there's all different ways to be parents, as we all know. And we have to honor that. Sneak peek, volume 3. So volume 3 is in the works. I'm going to give you a sneak peek. All right. So what does it feel like to be misgendered? Why did I ask them that question? Because every single person I work with, from the age of 4, which is my youngest, to 78, which is my oldest, somebody in their lives is misgendering them. Every person I work with. So I thought it was important. So Ryan, 16. This drawing explains how transmasculine people are frowned upon. It shows how I know who I am, and other people cannot respect who I am. This is painful, but this is Arthur, 15. This is my dysphoria from being misgendered. It is so painful, so scary, that it's hard to express. Words are just not strong enough. I drew myself in my binder with loads of scars, big cuts, and crying blood. The knives are making me bleed out from being misgendered. Now listen, Arthur is not exaggerating. He's not trying to get attention. This is real, man. This is real. The binder is a garment that holds their chest in. For a lot of trans boys, wear it until they get top surgery. But he's not exaggerating. And that's something I really want to make clear, because a lot of people think they're trying to get attention. Not. And this is Ronnie, another knife. Ronnie, 15. Being misgendered feels like being stabbed in the heart, because I know in my heart that I am a boy. So let's talk about that. What are you actually saying when you ignore a student's gender pronouns? Now, you can get this from queeritup.com. There's 10 reasons. I picked the best 3 because of time restraints. I know you better than you know yourself. When you make a decision not to respect someone's pronouns, you are ultimately saying to that their personal truth is something you are more knowledgeable about than they are. That's what you're saying. I'd rather hurt you repeatedly than change the way I speak about you. Each time you misgender a student, you're inflicting harm. Would you rather hurt someone or simply change the way you're speaking to them? I choose change the way you're speaking to them. I am telling you, look at that face. That picture says it all. You're inflicting harm, and that's not what you want to do. And I know a lot of people say it's hard, and we're going to talk about the power of the pause. There's ways, there's tricks and trades, but it's necessary. And I know that all of you out there, you became educators, and you're in that career for a reason. And if you cannot separate your personal values from your professional values, and maybe you don't like trans people or non-binary people, odds are some of you don't. If you can't separate that, then you need to go down a different career path. Yes, Julie.
Amen. Let me start with an amen. And then let me say, Dan just shared, and I just really liked it. What you're saying is my comfort or convenience is more important than your safety.
Oh, so Dan's the man, because Dan, your sense of safety is not important to me. You're way ahead of me, Dan. Oh my God, love it. So when you misgender a student, you run the risk of threatening their personal sense of safety as well as their physical safety. When someone feels invalidated and disrespected, they may not feel safe and comfortable in the space. When you disrespect your students' pronouns in front of other people, you are setting them up for bullying. Period. Don't bully your students. Honor their pronouns. Okay, so this I love this quote. I learned that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. how many of us has had an interaction with somebody that maybe wasn't the best, and you kind of don't remember every single word, but you remember how hurt or how angry you were, right? This is the point. So students will remember. I remember, and I'm a lot older than your students. I remember my situations in the school that weren't pleasant. So here we go. Julie's favorite part. There's a space in our brain between stimulation and reaction. Before you react, be mindful and allow words to pass through three gates. Is it true? Is it kind? And is it necessary? I want to talk about, is it necessary? I'm assuming, and maybe it's an assumption, that everybody knows what the truth is and everybody knows the difference between being kind and not being kind. Is it necessary? I don't mean, is it necessary for you to say something to someone? Is it necessary for them to hear it? What good is it going to do them? Is it going to bring them any wealth of knowledge? Or are you just saying something to somebody to get it off your chest? Check in with yourselves. Listen, the power of the pause could be a minute. Sometimes the power of my pause is 2.5 weeks. If I'm really upset with somebody and I can't talk to them about the situation without being a jerk, because I'm not a Buddha, I am actually human and I get angry still, I wait. But the power of the pause to really wait and say, okay, he, him, she, her, they, them, I am telling you, I guarantee it, if you practice that, before you know it, you won't have to, because it's just going to come natural. And then available on Amazon and Kindle. Now, Christy pointed out to me that the documentary used to be on Amazon Prime, but just recently, Frameline, who distributes the film, I guess, had a change of contract with them, and they don't have any of their videos on there. But you can go to frameline.org and buy the film, or it's available on Xfinity and some other thing that I will send links to after the training. Boop, boop. And look at us. We're always right on time. I'm telling you, Julie.
You're amazing. It's amazing.
I'm amazing. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to stop sharing so I can come up on the screen and see all your lovely faces. Where's Dan? Raise your hand. Thank you. You were right ahead of me. I love it. Love it. So do we have any questions, comments?
Yeah, so let's take questions and comments. I'm going to start as people write theirs, only just to make sure we keep moving. A common thing that I see or hear well-meaning humans do is go, oh, it's just so confusing nowadays, right? Well, I want to answer my own question, but what is that saying to humans who are in the presence of our confusion around all these gender terms?
Is your problem not? Yeah. Dan's right on. Yeah.
Yeah. Sort of, I'm sorry you're confused, but this is more information you need to know to teach all human beings.
Yeah. And you know, honestly, pronouns and names, especially with the young ones, once they, you know, really start embracing who they are, can change. You know, I mean, I have some trans kids that change their name. I tell the parents, don't legally change it yet. Wait, because their name might change, but you definitely want to, especially the kiddos that are in high school, legally change the name so that their legal name is on the diploma. I mean, there's all different ways you have to navigate through that, but names can change on a daily basis, and so can pronouns. Everything's fluid.
I'm gonna ask people to practice this, and I want you to say your answer. So I show up in your class and I say, hey, my name is Chad and I'm a boy. What do you say to Chad who's entering your math class? Welcome. Hey, Chad. This is good. You're doing awesome. Hey, Chad. Welcome. Nice to meet you. You got it. And I'm not sharing this for the people here who have been at this conference. Remember, this is going out to 6,000 8,000 other people in the world that need to know, hey, Chad, nice to meet you. Have a seat. Let's get going.
Yeah. No matter who Chad is tomorrow, It's the same language. You know, hey, Mr. Ferriolo or Tony, I'm now Sally. Okay, hi Sally. Great to see that you're in the class. Have a seat. That's it. That is it. You know, I mean, it is so important. And honestly, I didn't put this in the presentation, but you just made me think of something else. Check in with yourselves and check in with how gendered your classroom is. How gendered is it?
Why do we have to say, good morning, boys and girls? Why do we have to say, boys line up here, girls line up here? Why do we have to say, if you're a boy, head over to the, we don't.
Yeah.
Give alternatives, Tony.
Yeah, sure. So welcome class. Hi class. Hi everyone. You know, we were talking about this the last time we talked. It was like, hey, if you have blue sneakers on or sneakers on, line up first. You have to be creative, and you all have creative minds. You can have a little non-binary kid in first grade who doesn't even know yet that either they're non-binary or trans, but being put in a girl's line or a boy's line inside of them brings them pain. They don't know, right? So I would look at that. Bathrooms I would look at. I was telling the story about a first grade teacher who had a girl toy box and a boy toy box. And if you did all your work, you would get to pick one. And Jack, who transitioned to Jackie over the summer, teacher knew, she insisted that Jackie pulled out of the boy's box. So Jackie was a girl now. So I was called into the school and I rolled into town. And I said to her, why don't you just have one box, let kids pick anything they want, right? And she was like, oh my God. Like she wasn't, this is where I struggle. Some people just don't get it. And they're not trying to cause a student any harm. She never even thought of it. So then she made one box and everybody got to pick out their own. So just look around and just be mindful of how we're doing that. Putting your name, your pronouns at the end of your name, if a student says, why are you doing that? Well, you can say, you know, you can't tell somebody's pronoun by the way they look. So we want to know. So, you know, it's awesome.
So just putting your pronouns has been such an interesting thing. I do it at conferences, places I write it in when there's no space. Tony, we've been talking at this conference about how to be a co-conspirator. So yeah. Bettina Love, she spoke at our conference earlier. Just a quick recap. She talked about an African-American woman climbing a pole, a white man who put his hand on the pole and said, if you tase the pole, you can tase me. And the cops didn't tase the pole because you wouldn't tase a white man in the light of day, was her point. And she says, co-conspirators put their hand on the pole. Ready, friends, to be co-conspirators? We're using our gender pronouns all the time. Also, Tony, you helped me with a word that I just clearly, you helped me. You said, never say preferred pronouns. Explain why, please.
Yeah, because it's not what they prefer. It's their pronoun. You know, and here's the reality. Like, I used to say it. That was the language, right? The language is constantly changing. That's why people have to be constantly trained. You know, my best friend in the world, Drew Leviser, is an attorney. He worked for years at a legal, Lambda Legal. He was the director of trans rights. He helps me keep up. He helps me. Now he's at the bar and he's doing wonderful work training attorneys and law students, okay? It's the same kind of training as I do, but at a, you know, for lawyers and stuff like that. If it wasn't for him, I'd be a little back too, but we have to keep up with the language, right? It's not their preferred name or pronoun. It is their name and pronoun, right? So that'd be awesome. And I don't know if you have name tags in your classrooms, but that'd be something kind of cool too, so that you can remember, hey, that's right. Okay. You used to be this, now you're that, and I'm going to get it right every time.
I know we were talking about trans students, and Tony often talks about LGBTQ students kind of a lot, the whole continuum of human beings. And I'm just going to use an example that my son had. So I'm gay, married to a woman, and my son came to school first year in middle school and saw a rainbow sign on somebody's door. And he came home crying and said, the rainbow sign meant that human is safe for me. This person knows my family. And so he told that story to his entire staff at a staff meeting and came the next day to rainbow stickers on every door.
So let's talk about rainbow stickers on every door.
Okay.
And let's talk about pink triangles for the trans community on every door. Unless that school is trained, right?
Good, keep going.
That everyone in that school, from the receptionists to the janitorial staff, engineers, whatever you call them, I don't know, you can't put a sticker up, because it is more damaging to people when they're walking into a space where they think is safe, and then it's not safe. I say that to hospitals. You know, I train hospitals all the time. Don't be putting up flags, rainbow flags on every door. Your people aren't trained. And have you, after they're trained, do you keep track and have evaluations for 6 to 8 months to see that everybody is complying to the training? I'm just saying, like, it's really dangerous. I'm glad that in that situation it wasn't, but it is very dangerous to say, yeah, listen, I'm a safe space, and then you're not.
So, I love it. And that was tons of learning for me. We're all learning.
Yeah.
Right now, what you just said, tons of learning for me. So thank you. And I'll say one caveat that was true is people were asked to take a sticker if they felt they were a safe space.
Cool.
And it happened. So, and then I just have to add, it was interesting. The custodial staff started taking down the stickers because they thought that someone was doing it without. Anyway, it was fascinating. But right, awesome. Again, we're all learning. So we don't
want. Everybody's learning.
We don't want safe space stickers if people aren't safe. Thank you. Brilliant. Yeah. Okay. Are people wanting to ask questions in the chat? If so, only because I'm trying to do two things, participate and let's just say Jen said, what are your thoughts when people express that as an expression of their religious freedom, they refuse to use preferred pronouns?
Well, I think that if they're an educator within a school district, then that needs to be a decision that the administrators make. Whether that person stays there or not. I'm not trying to be a jerk, but I'm being honest. I mean, every student deserves a respectful, safe education. And if it's because of somebody, and they can't separate their professional values from their personal values, like they can't follow the school's protocol and they're going by their personal values, then you need to find another profession. Because to me, if I was, you know, the administrator there or the superintendent, that person would get one more chance. And I was actually at a school in Connecticut. Spanish teacher would not come on board. They pulled the kid out of the class. I'm training her. She looks right at me and says, well, I don't understand why. I said, well, because he tried to kill himself. And that I was not kidding. So you're not complying and calling him he and still referring to him as she in front of me just proves to me that you won't honor this kid. So that's why they pulled him out of your class, because he tried to kill himself. All right. We don't want that. I would rather have somebody have to look for another job than have to bury a kid, you know?
So public schools, we've been talking a ton about it. In public schools, somehow, some way, we've gotten this false idea that we only teach certain kids. So I don't teach kids with that label, or I don't teach kids with that label or that label, and we've been talking about it a ton. Just think about this same exact concept. We're public school educators, we teach all students. And if your identity, religious or otherwise, gets in the way or impacts someone else's freedom, then it's not the job for you.
Yeah.
Dan asked a question, and it's a really good one. Should teachers ask kids to introduce themselves to including their pronouns across the board to normalize that idea? And then later says, or is there a risk of harm in that practice?
You know, well, if they know that there's, listen, we know our students. And a lot of times we know when there's a trans student in our class or non-binary student in our class, you might want to just take them aside and say, hey, what do you think of everybody doing that? Do you know what I mean? I don't think it's harm if you start the year off that way. I don't think it's harm at all. Listen, I start every one of my groups that my name is Tony, my pronouns are he and him. And we go around the group, even if it's a Zoom call, if I'm running like a support group or I'm doing some kind of meditation training, we always start with that. Because again, Dan, like, just like struggling, pronouns are invisible. You don't know my pro. I can actually say to you, I use female pronouns, and that might be the truth. You know, I don't, but that just might be reality for some people.
I'm also thinking across the week of learning, right? And so I'm thinking about how kids introduce themselves, and I'm thinking of Shelley Moore's Trivial Pursuit Pieces of Identity. And so Tony's really focused on pronoun use and gender identity. And we've been thinking about disability, we've been thinking about race and language and on and on and on. And so I'm wondering how to be really, and Dan, just to add to that idea, when you have kids introduce themselves, this might be a place to invite and say, you can share pronouns, you can share identities that you prefer, you can share, you can share, you can share, and you can have examples. And then I might share mine and why. And then also talk about why you might not choose to share too. So I think it's a really complex introduction on the first day of school, but at the same time, I don't know, it might be a time to invite.
Yeah, and you know, if you're an educator and you're asking your class to say their name and pronoun, then I would say your name and pronouns too. Like, you know, I mean, best practices to like say, yeah. So I always start off, and we do a highlight, low light, which I know you probably wouldn't have time for in class, but I always want to know, hey, what's really good happening in your life and what isn't so good, because then I can kind of guide you through the training in a way that I'm sensitive to your needs. I'm talking about when I'm working with kids and doing math, you know, big trainings with kiddos, you know.
Beautiful. I'm looking at the time and knowing that we need to be respectful of everybody's time. Tony, I can't thank you enough. I'm so happy to have met you.
Oh, me too. Me too. I think this is going to be a long, loving relationship.
I feel like we're going to last a long time. And the point is this, that we're in schools all the time. So Christy and I are in school settings. We're working on creating inclusive environments. And I kid you not, and this is what I told Tony the first time I met him. On our way out the door, someone goes, Julie, I have a quick question. We have a trans kid. Can you help me with, right? And it's not as if I don't have knowledge, but to know Tony and to say, let's talk firsthand about your experiences, it really, really matters to us.
Yeah, I've been training since 2007, 2008 schools when nobody wanted a trans person in there. And now they're like, can you come in, please? Times have changed.
I hope you never get out. Well, I sort of hope you get out of work, because being trans is just sort of boring and not that interesting anymore, right?
That's a professional trans guy. What can I say?
That's right. That's right. Good. We're getting a lot of comments in the chat. And Christy, maybe you can help me figure out what we should do timing wise, because I want to make sure you're getting a lot of love in the chat too, Tony.
Oh, thank you, everyone. I'm loving the energy.
That's, I'm just going to add this one question, because I saw it twice and I just want to, we're going to end with this last question. So someone said, I'm a leader of a GSA and I would love to hear. And Mindy's question was, Mindy, unmute yourself and say your question, because I don't want to re-scroll. Go ahead.
Mindy.
Well, I just saw in the GLSEN report that having a GSA or some sort of support organization has benefits in lots of different ways. And I was just wondering, of your personal experience working with kids, if they've come back and said that these organizations are supportive for them and how.
GSAs are great. It depends on who's leading the GSA. I think that the GSA should be in elementary schools. I don't know why they're not. They're barely in middle schools. You can't be what you can't see. And every school needs to have posters of trans kids, non-binary kiddos, gay, lesbian, bisexual. You know what I mean? Like, they have to see themselves and they have to hear themselves in you know, talks and books. And that's really important, right? So the GSAs, the kids that are in GSAs that are run by good GSA leaders, it changes their lives. It really, really does. Because the role of a GSA is to educate really the school. So, you know, like I'll go in, I never charge for GSA stuff. If you want me to zoom in or something, I never, when I go into a lot of GSAs and talk to the kids and give them ideas and just talks, and we show the film for money and stuff like that. It's important. So thank you. And you're leading up a GSA, Mindy? No? Oh, well, then maybe, I think you should.
I am.
Oh, Kelly is.
Kelly is.
I'm sure, Kelly, I'm sure you rock at it, I'm sure. Awesome. Yeah, so good job, because you're changing and you're saving lives there, Kelly. Good job.
I'll probably contact you to maybe help out someday.
So. Yeah, sure. That'd be awesome.
And so, as you know, Tony's on our presenter list. We want people to contact Tony. We want Tony to come to schools. I also want you to show the film places. And so if you haven't had a chance, and I know access was a little bit of an issue for people, how many people here just put yes in the chat if you watched the film in preparation for today?
I did.
Yeah. Jacinda, Sandy, Susie, Tina. Awesome. Tiffany's about to. Anybody who watched the film, could you unmute and just share what your thoughts were? If you feel like it, I should say.
Only if they're good thoughts. No, I'm kidding.
That's what I say. If you love it, can you share about it? If you don't, can you send me an email? That'd be great. Mm-hmm. Anybody want to share about that?
Tony, hi.
Hi.
I love the part about your tattoo and how you were getting your, yeah, I don't know.
I have a lot of them.
Well, the one that you were getting during Self-Made Man.
Yeah.
Was your, help me, who you.
The one of the picture of me when I was younger.
Yes.
Yeah, I had a picture of myself pre-transition. I was very young. I was probably around 7. And I had it done in black and gray because I will never look back on my journey and regret it. Tony, before Tony transitioned, saved my life. That was the person who was strong enough. I get really emotional. To live long enough to allow me to be who I am today. I wouldn't have done it without her. So I don't, like a lot of people want to forget their past, and I get it. But to me, everything that's ever happened to me, good or bad, just like all of you, is like a blueprint, and it created who I am today. So I never look back and say, I wish that never happened, right? But yeah, she was, and it's one of my favorite tattoos. It really is. And I look down at her a lot, but they got me all like teary-eyed. Look what you did.
Sorry.
If you're not crying, you're not paying attention, folks. Jacinda just said, I loved it. I love that it included, this is about the film. I love that it included people of all ages and included the families and their support groups too. So the reason I keep talking about the film is because, of course, I want you to see it, but I also want you to know all of Tony's work. So meaning, yes, he does books that are fabulous. I have one by my nightstand. I look at it all the time because I think, what does it feel like? And I don't need to understand it. That's something else Tony's explained. I don't need to understand it. I need to figure out how to support humans. So that's important to me too. The other thing is all the support groups that exist in the world, and Tony runs them. And I've been thinking about COVID and thinking and hoping, Tony, that it means that you can support folks from all over the world.
And we have been. Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. I've been getting calls from all over the country, and we've been inviting parents and kids in. And I think that once we go back to being in play, you know, in person, that I'm going to continue my Zoom national support groups. You know, I've been doing the support group since 2008, and we've served over 1,000 families easy. And there's no charge to these, by the way.
Yes.
Never charge for support.
And Sandy just said, I'm not going to say this out loud because I don't want to cry, so I'll do it without crying. I'll try. She said, I can't say this without crying, but your work with these students is incredible. The happiness you brought to them and encouraging them to be who they are.
No, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Brings a tear to my eye too.
And Jacinda's really thinking about something that's always next step, and I love it so much. She says, I'm also thinking about the intersections of identities and the groups who might be left out of support groups.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's a lot of intersectionality with race, gender. You know, that I'm actually just did something for Yale New Haven Health and talked a little bit about, you know, trans women of color and trans men of color. So that's a whole other training. But yeah, it's hard sometimes to get the people who need it the most into these support groups, and we're working on it. You know, there's an organization, True Colors, out of Hartford, Connecticut, and they really focus on inner city, and they take care of a lot of these kiddos, LGBTQ organization. So
beautiful. Okay, I'm going to sum up our time together, which I hate to do because it's always so great to stay in the bubble of humans that care about this work. Christy, I don't know if there's anything else you want to say, but as Christy kind of unmutes and sort of regroups, I would love it if people put in the chat any love for Tony and his work today so that you can soak it in. Let's give Tony a round of applause. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you, thank you. It's been awesome.
So awesome. And Christy, anything else?
I just have to say it was worth the wait.
Mm. Everyone's nodding. That's fun to watch everyone nod at once. Yes, it was worth the wait.
Yeah, we appreciate you.
Thank
we appreciate you.
Thank you
all week. We appreciate your tenacity and your perseverance, not just in this week, but in your work in humanity. And I'm just glad to be back in the bubble because I was struggling the last few hours without y'all.
Well, thanks for being patient with me too and the tropical storm.
Cheryl, I would love it if you showed your drawing right now. So if you don't mind, Cheryl is our resident artist who's been visual note taking. And Tony, just so you're clear, we do visual note taking because not everybody uses text to understand stuff.
That is awesome. Wow, that is awesome.
And Tony, these are all on our dashboard. And so all the presenters, like Pat Radel and I were talking this morning, he wants to frame it and put in his office. I'll make sure you get this as a PDF and a
thank you so much.
And Cheryl has given permission that you can use it and reuse it.
And such talent, my God, that's you just did this right now.
You did it live and you'll see.
Oh my God, I'm like floored.
Tony, you're a fast talker.
I have work for you. I want your information. I have a lot of work for you.
Oh, absolutely. I'd love to work with you.
Awesome.
That's why we want to connect you, because Cheryl's incredible at doing this. And so I almost never present without Cheryl drawing or creating at the same time. God.
I'm blown away here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in the chat. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, that's great. Sarah, you're cracking me up. A great day five of a 3-day conference. That's the truth, right? All right. Love you, everybody. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Take care, Tony. Thanks again.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.